another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler.
Hi, this is Jack Spierka with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world and the changing economic times and the things that we can all do to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. Dictated, as always, during my 50-mile commute between Arlington and Frisco, Texas. And today, folks, you have me on a gorgeous 62-degree morning on my way up to Frisco to spend my day at my office working with my staff. And today we're not really going to talk about exactly how to live a better life. We're going to talk about the reasons that we need to prepare and the reasons that we're having all this economic turmoil. I'm going to explain today in a very informal format. I mean, a lot of times when I do these shows, I have outlines, I have dates, I have specific sources that I can cite. Today, even though I never have a script, today I also don't even have an outline. I'm going to just explain to you, and back when I used to go to the Catholic Church as a kid, there was one part of the service that I actually enjoyed. It was called the homily, and it was where the priest just kind of sat down and shot from the hip and spoke to the people. And that's kind of what I'm going to do today. This is more like a homily. I don't have a lecture prepared at all. I don't have any notes prepared at all. What I want to simply do is, based on my understanding of the events, and I believe you'll be able to fact check anything that I say today, explain to you exactly why we have the type of currency that we do today and the weakness that it puts us in and why the eventual results of this have got to be economic ruin. Now, that economic ruin could come in 10 years or it could come in 100 years. All we know is that history has shown us that when a currency is backed by nothing, okay, except debt on the people that spend it, that it eventually collapses, and that's what we have today. It might surprise you where I'm going to start, though, today. I'm going to start all the way back during the time right before the American Revolutionary War, when we were still 13 colonies under the crown of Britain. And if you went to school like most kids in America, you probably heard a lot of stuff about the American Revolutionary War in at least an American history class. Probably somewhere between, you know, 5th grade, 6th grade, you probably heard a little bit about it, and then you probably heard about it again in high school. And if you're like most products of the school system, you probably believe that the primary reason that we had the American Revolution was because the British were taxing us and not allowing us representation in their government. That's what's taught, the credo of no taxation without representation, which is supposed to make us all willingly submit to taxation today because, of course, we have representatives. I don't know exactly how they represent us. They seem to represent themselves well, but, you know, we elect them and there's this system of government founded by our Constitution, and hey man, you got a representative, if you don't like what he's doing, vote him out, right? That's the response. Well, that's all good and well, except what I have to tell you is that that entire doctrine is a complete, utter lie. That is not why we fought the American Revolutionary War. And don't believe me, believe Benjamin Franklin. And I can't exactly quote exactly what he wrote, and I'll try to find this and cite it in the show notes today at thesurvivalpodcast.com for you, so you can go read it for yourself. But Benjamin Franklin basically stated that the main reason for the American Revolutionary War was that the British were unwilling to allow the colonies to run what he called an honest currency. Now, what was an honest currency? An honest currency was all these little banks that had started to pop up over here in the colonies. And the way that a currency would be run by a bank, and people don't understand that banks used to just basically print money the way that the Federal Reserve, which most people think is the government, is not today, printed money, is sort of. Their money was actually backed by something. So what they would do is a bank would have a certain amount of gold that it would keep in a vault, and it would issue a note against that gold, and it would say, if you bring this note to our bank and ask for gold, we'll give you $20 or $1 or $100 worth of gold in return for this note. This note can be used to purchase and buy goods and services because anybody that knows that our bank is real can come to our bank and get gold for it, and they'll be able to recognize this. And we were moving toward a point where we were going to have one recognizable printed currency, but it was going to be backed that way, and it was going to become a currency for the colonies that was all backed by gold. And we would have eventually gone off of the system where all the banks were printing their own currency, because that opens counterfeiting problems and things like that. But basically, the system was starting to work. And this angered the Central Bank of England, because the Central Bank of England, of course, controlled England's money supply. And what ended up happening was King George refused to allow the colonists to have their own currency. That actually was the main cause of the American Revolutionary War. Now, unless you've done some research on your own, unless you've watched independent video and stuff like that, or unless you've had an amazingly enlightened history teacher, even at the college level, it would have to be an amazingly enlightened history teacher to teach you this. You've probably never heard that before. You may believe that it is, in fact, a lie, that I'm lying to you, that that's not true. Trust me, folks, you can fact check this. This is absolutely true. This is why we separated from England. Now, why is that important? Well, we were willing, the founding fathers that wrote the law of our land, the Constitution of the United States that defines the government, were willing to die and risk everything that they had, to risk being, if they were captured, even if they didn't die in battle, if they were captured, to be hung as traitors, to become an independent sovereign group, a confederation of states, all right, for that ideal. That was the primary driving ideal, that as long as we had a central bank, we would not be free, all right, and that this was a land of liberty. We wanted to be part of the UK. We wanted to stay part of England, but we wanted to do it on terms where we had freedom from debt. I'll explain to you how the debt comes in just a moment. But just understand that as long as there's a central bank, a private banking, a private institution that prints money that's not owned and controlled by the government, that the only eventual result is that the nation that they provide money to and the people that they provide money to will always be in debt. They will never get out of debt. Even if they don't have credit cards and mortgages, and even if they're saying they're living debt-free, there will always be a debt. I'll explain that in just a second. Because before I explain that, I have to leap forward about 150 years, I guess, 160, 170 years, to 1913, okay? In 1913, we ended up with the Federal Reserve System. Now, the thing was in the works a long time before that. There were a lot of things that were done to scare the public into accepting the Federal Reserve. I won't go into them. Just let me tell you, there was a recession and run on the banks in the early 1900s that was as bad as the Great Depression. No one talks about it. The reason no one talks about it in your history class is because it shows what creates the Federal Reserve as being the force that it is. What happened is that J.P. Morgan had a huge amount of influence, and what he did was use his influence to basically leak information that said that a certain bank in New York, a very large prominent bank, was on the verge of failure. So that caused a run on that bank. When that run on that bank happened and that bank became insolvent, other people began to make runs on their banks. Sounds like the Great Depression, except this happened in the 1900s, okay, early 1900s, around 1904 to 1907, okay? And everybody started going and pulling their money out of the banks, and they ended up with a shortfall in the currency because people were hoarding cash because a false panic was created. So that opened the stage to allow the installation of the Federal Reserve. Okay, now the Federal Reserve is about as federal as, let's say, Federal Express. They absolutely are not part of the government. They are not controlled by the government. They are not regulated by the government. They listen, supposedly at least listen to the government, and then do whatever they like, and they set policy. Ben Bernanke is not controlled by the Congress, the Senate, or the President. Okay, Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Bernanke, does whatever he decides is best based on his conference with all the members of the Board of the Federal Reserve, many of whom we do not even know their names. Okay? So we have this group of people, we don't even know who they are, setting the monetary policy for our nation. In complete private control with very little to no government oversight whatsoever, and more importantly than no government oversight, no real government recourse. There's not much the government can do if it doesn't agree with what the Fed does. All right, if the government doesn't agree with you, they can throw you in jail. They can't put Bernanke in jail, and they can't just easily dismantle the Federal Reserve. Though to me, that is the goal the American people should have, is dismantling the Federal Reserve. Let's get on with this now, though, how this all works out. Okay, so once the Federal Reserve was installed, we got into a position where the only way that money could be created was this Federal Reserve Bank, this group of banks, this cartel, basically, would print money and issue it to the country. Now, here's the problem with that. Do you think they're doing this? Running mathematical formulas, running printing presses, hiring all these people, distributing money, making money, you know, minting coinage, doing all this stuff. Do you think they're doing all this because they're nice guys? Or do you think they're doing it to make a profit? Well, they're bankers. They're doing it to make a profit. So how do they make a profit? Here's the thing that people don't realize. The currency is not issued to us. It is not issued to the government. It is lent. All right? Every dollar is a certificate for debt to the Federal Reserve for $1 plus interest. Right? You heard me say it the right way. $1 plus interest. So every time the Fed prints a dollar and gives it to us, we owe them $1.04 back. Now here's the problem with that. Where do we get the 4 cents? Well, we have to get it from the money supply. Where does the money come from? The Federal Reserve. So by borrowing the 4 cents to pay the 4 cents, we go deeper in debt, and the interest continues to compound against us. This is where we're at today. Every time the Fed prints a dollar, every time the government spends a dollar, we go deeper in debt. Even if we don't borrow the money from the Chinese, we owe the Federal Reserve more money. Now, this is how this system works. Now, you might not be taught that this is how the system works, but if you actually look into it, you'll see that I'm telling you the gospel truth here, that this is exactly how this system works, and we've created a perpetual debt cycle. Let me explain this in a way that might make it more concrete and easier for you to understand, because people look at dollars and they just see this paper and this arbitrary number, and they don't really get the finite nature. In other words, there's a limited supply of money. There's only so much money. All the money put together is the M3 money supply. That's how many dollars there are. And every time the federal government prints more, we have more debt. So there's never enough money in circulation to pay it all back. It can't be done. To make this more concrete, let's create a fake product. Let's call it a green widget. Okay, and it's a little plastic Hootis thing that can only be manufactured by one group of people, the Federal Reserve. And they have a special machine that stamps these things out, ba-doom, 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 right? And no one else in the world can create one, all right? There is no other green widget anywhere else in the world, all right? Now, the Federal Reserve is a small entity, let's say, that only produced 100 green widgets, right? And you are their only customer. They give you 100 green widgets. And they say, okay, you know, whoever you are, this is your 100 green widgets. Now remember, you owe us green widgets back with interest. And you say, okay, so interest, so how do I pay my interest? Oh, we only accept green widgets. Well, how many green widgets do I owe? Well, you owe 105, 5% interest. Okay, but I only have 100. Yeah. Okay, well, how do I get my 5? Oh, we'll give you 5 more. Do I have to pay interest on that? Oh, yeah, it's a fractional widget. You'll owe us, you know, 1/100th of a widget. Well, how do I pay that? Oh, you have to borrow more. Well, I hear I'm going to need 1,000 widgets. No problem. We'll give them to you. You'll owe us 1,050 in return. Well, can I go somewhere else and get some widgets? I'm sorry, we're the only people in the world that make them. That's the Federal Reserve System. That's how the dollar works. You have to pay me back in dollars. I control all the dollars. I print all the dollars. There will never be enough money to put the money back. It can never be repaid. Now the staunch person that believes in the system will say, so what? It's not meant to be repaid. We don't take the money back. Of course they do. It's called contracting the money supply. It's when they reduce the dollars in circulation. It's when they skim profit. Because, again, I have to explain this to you. It's not about the paper. That's not where their profit comes from. Their profit comes from your productivity, your activity. By printing and controlling the money, they place a value on your activity, a value on what you do, and a value on your individual wealth. And it allows the elite to access that however they choose, to direct it however they choose, to set up companies that do whatever they want. Okay, to seize property whenever they decide that they want to seize property by calling in debt. That's how this works. That's how this system goes. Now, the only issue that they had when they finally took over in 1913 was that we were still backed by gold, so that somewhat limited how many dollars they could produce. But before I explain how the gold standard wipes everything off the map by going away from it, and it just gives these guys complete free reign that they took in 1975, I have to explain to you first how the Federal Reserve was created, the shadow way this thing was done. In 1907, a group of prominent bankers, who we don't even know their names, they disguised their names when they went out to Jekyll Island off the coast, the Atlantic coast, it was either Georgia or the Carolinas, I think it's Georgia. And they all got together, these 10 guys sat down and they wrote the Federal Reserve Act. This was not written by Congress or the Senate. They wrote it themselves the way that they wanted it. And then they used this false crisis around 1907 through 1913 to win support for it. And then, right after the Christmas break in Congress, when most of the congressmen were home with their families on break, the ones that were in the pockets of these bankers voted on it with the most of the Congress absent. It was then put on Wilson's desk, Woodrow Wilson signed it into law. The American people largely never knew it happened until it was over and until 1914, when they began to notice differences in the way that the money looked. That's how this happened. Now again, that can be fact-checked, and indeed Woodrow Wilson himself lamented later and wrote how regretful he was that basically he sold out our country to this small group of 10 men that would now control our nation by controlling our money. Again, folks, this is fact. This is reality. This is how this happened. And I know this may not be the typical Jack Spirico Survival Podcast, but it's important that you know and understand these things. And these things should be taught to our children. Our children should be learning the real history of our country and the real history of our currency. And the real reality of our economic system in school. And they're not going to do it, so it's up to you. So I have to teach you, so you can teach your kids. And then you can teach the people that are next to you, so that we'll all understand how this actually works. Because the next thing I'm going to go through, and this will wrap the podcast up today, is just how we went off the gold standard, and how we went from money that was backed by something to money that was backed by nothing. Okay, so once this cartel of international bankers, and these are people like J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller, all right? These are the guys that control the world today. They control it by controlling the money supply of the United States, which is the wealthiest nation in the world. The only problem that they had after they seized control of the issuing of the money and controlling debt on it is they had some limits. And these limits were temporarily rescinded by presidents, various presidents. Wilson did it for a while. Roosevelt did it at various times because of wars and panics that allowed them to print more money. All right, then there was actual gold backing it, or to change the value of the dollar against gold so they could print more. But with that going on, even with that, there was some check in place where there was some limit to how many dollars they could produce. Now remember, they want to produce more money. Why do they want to produce more money? Every time they produce a dollar, it creates debt against the dollar. The more money you can pump into a country, the greater you devalue the individual dollar, but you maintain a larger than percentage of control on the entire population. You create debt slavery to the nation. And eventually you create enough currency that you create individual debt slavery to financial institutions. And when the financial institution fails, then the big fish steps in and gobbles up the little fish. This is Bank of America. Okay? Suck it up, Merrill Lynch. It's exactly what happened. It's exactly why this was able to happen. It's exactly why we have so many dollars in circulation today. It's exactly why your dollar buys a fraction of what it bought 40 years ago. All right? So eventually we started to push the country off the gold standard. And then during the war years, or leading up to the war years actually, during the Depression, President Roosevelt banned people from owning gold in any significant quantity. And people were required to turn their gold in. Okay? And then we took that gold and we used it to buy currency from foreign countries. Our gold, like, you might wonder why it's easy to get a 1920 gold piece today when we think that the U.S. government seized all the gold and melted it down and put it into bars. They didn't put it into bars. They sold it off to international banks. Right, they sold it off to Europe. All those gold coins today from the 20s, the St. Gaudens, beautiful coins that were stolen from our people, that our people are buying back today at, you know, massive amounts higher than they were worth when they were taken away. They're taken away at $20. People are buying them back at $1,000. Right? They were taken by foreign interests. And eventually we went off a true gold standard. We went to kind of a gold check standard, where the United States government would, and the Federal Reserve would look together and say, okay, a dollar is worth X a part of gold. Okay? So we didn't have enough gold to fulfill all the debts. And you would now look at a dollar bill and it would say this note is legal tender instead of this note is redeemable in gold. And the last vestiges of that were, you know, you could no longer demand gold or silver in return for your currency from the federal government happened around 1965. Okay? That's also when we stopped printing silver coinage. Alright? So at that point, the dollar was becoming more and more worthless. We would just decide, okay, well, you can buy X numbers of grams of gold with a dollar. Alright? And the people started saying, wait a minute, we're not real comfortable with this anymore. We don't like this system anymore. So all the money started to go into gold. People started to buy up gold and dump dollars. So eventually around 1975, okay, our Federal Reserve System and our government jointly completely went off the gold standard. And there's absolutely no relationship in gold to paper currency anymore in the United States today. Our money's backed by nothing. And in 1965, we stopped printing silver coins, or coining silver coins, and we started coining copper nickel coins. And those copper nickel coins are worth a fraction of their face value. So those are also worthless because they're also issued by the Federal Reserve. It's U.S. currency. It comes from the Federal Reserve Bank. So today what we have is a currency that's backed by absolutely nothing except the future wealth of the nation. And it's handing debt down from generation to generation. And we've actually been in this system since 1975, so you're looking at 10, 20, 35 odd years. 35 years, and this is what it's brought. It's brought some of the most destructive financial policies in the history of the United States to the American people. It's put more people into debt. It spawned the health insurance industry, which I can't go into now. But let me just tell you, in 1975, if you were sick, you went to the doctor, and just about any middle-class American could afford to pay for basic health care and basic prescriptions out of their pocket. And today, people are paying $20,000 a year for health insurance that's covering $5,000 worth of medical expenses, and they feel that they have to do it because they know at any time they could become severely ill and the cost could run away. And that is a false system. It's also been created by inflating this money supply and devaluing the dollar. A dollar today should buy pretty much what it bought in 1950. But it doesn't. It doesn't buy a fraction of what it bought in 1950. The proponents of this farce of a system, this debt Layton system would say, is if our dollar was so strong against other people's currencies, no one would be able to afford to do business with us. Well, first of all, where the U.S. goes, the world follows. If we were on the gold standard, most other nations would revert back to it. This is going to be very difficult to ever make happen, though. It's almost going to require the total failure of the currency. It's going to almost require a complete breakdown, because the powers that control this thing are extremely powerful, and they're not just here. They're in Europe. They're in England. They're in Australia. They're in Asia. They're in South America. A lot of these wars that are being fought, the people behind the scenes don't really not get along. The war is a way to make profit. And these wars have been used as profit tools and in methods of putting the country deeper into debt in ways that have never been done before. How many people were taught in school that on some levels World War II saved the United States from the Great Depression? It's a complete lie. If you watch the movie Flags of Our Fathers, what you'll learn in that movie, a real truth that comes out of that movie, beyond just, you know, the Marines that planted the flag, not being the guys that toured the country weren't the guys that actually planted the flag, they all died. That's the small truth. Here's what the big truth is that everybody misses. The United States was almost broke by VJ Day. By the time we declared victory over Japan, the country was nearly bankrupt. They were begging people to buy war bonds, okay? They were borrowing money from our own people. They were borrowing money from anywhere they could get it. But there was at least some still gold backing it, so it put some control on that debt. Today, when we wage war, like the Gulf War, and like these other police actions that we take across the world, the debt that we acquire is astronomical. And it enslaves the entire nation and the nation's people. And the only way that we're ever going to get out of it is to destroy the Federal Reserve System. Which, you know, as hard as it would be to overthrow the government, it may be even harder to overthrow the Federal Reserve. To me, the only way to do that is to put, you know, 400 congressmen like Ron Paul into office. And that's going to take the stomach of the American people. Now, here's the beauty, folks. We still have the freedom to do it. I don't know that it's going to happen anytime soon because these guys really control the media as well. If you control the money, you control the media. If you control what the media shows people, then people are led to believe a guy like Dr. Ron Paul is a crackpot. When Dr. Paul actually would tell you everything I just told you is dead on, spot on, and there is something we could do about it, if the other clowns in government would start putting the interest of the American people and what we're leaving to our children ahead of their own special interests. But they don't want to do it. So, folks, I think I'm going to wrap up there today. We're going to keep this one under 30 minutes. I just wanted to make sure that everybody understands how this system works. And if you think that anything I've told you today is not dead on, I want you to realize something. I want you to realize that a lie is best hidden by putting it in plain sight. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about this financial mess that we're in. I've been digging up a lot of information on Merrill Lynch and Lehman Brothers. And I've also been digging up a lot of information on some other companies. Now, I'll tell you, the next one that could be a big failure is AIG. AIG doesn't only offer savings accounts like you keep hearing on television. They insure other lending institutions. If AIG fails, it could be really bad. It could be the next one. Basically, the state of New York is now allowing AIG to mortgage itself for 20 of the $40 billion that it needs. All right, but no one's willing to bail them out. And if that thing tumbles, God knows how many other cascading institutions will fall. This is all a result of a fiat currency. It's why I advise you to have at least a handful of silver coins. Have some gold if you can afford to do that. But, you know, beyond that, if people say, well, I don't really have the money for gold and silver. Well, first of all, I tell you, throw $20 a month at some silver. I mean, it's not going to buy you a ton, but, you know, while you have the time, while it's easy to do, while silver's way down. Silver came down about 50% of value as the dollar's been, you know, quote-unquote strengthened in the global market temporarily anyway, while all this crap's going on. But yesterday, the Dow went down 500 points. Who knows what it's going to do today? But just be doing things to shore things up. And understand this lie in plain sight thing, because tomorrow, in addition to telling you what I've learned about these other financial institutions and how many of them are teetering, and I mean big companies are teetering on the brink of bankruptcy, I'm going to explain a lie in plain sight. Tomorrow, I'm going to tell you a lie that you believe. I can just about guarantee you that 99.9% of people that listen to this show, when I tell you this lie, you'll go, well, that's true. And then I'm going to use the founders of our country, people like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, to show you the lie for what it is, and to show you how you've been misled. And once I do this, you're going to realize that anybody that ever wanted to could have found this information in about 5 minutes. That's how long it took me to put it together. And they could have gone to a source like Wikipedia and got this information. And you would know that one of the greatest lies told to us by industry and government is in fact a lie. And not just a little lie, a huge lie. A lie that makes us tolerate something we shouldn't tolerate. But I'm not going to tell you what it is today. You're going to have to tune in tomorrow. On that note, I also want to remind everybody about our listener appreciation contest. I believe we're going to go over 700 visitors this week, by the end of the week. And we're looking for 1,000. When we hit 1,000, I'm going to send the winner an iPod, a Nano, and one of the new Chromatic iPods, 8 gig. I'm going to just basically send the winner an email, say, hey, you've won. Go here to Apple, look at the colors, pick your color, tell me which one you want, and I'm going to send it to you. And that's just for helping us tell other people about the Survival Podcast. And all I ask you to do, there's a couple different methods, is tell at least one person. And that's the minimum. I hope you do more, but if you tell at least one person on your honor about my show and recommend that they listen to it, I'll put you in that drawing, and we'll give that away. And I got another cool contest coming after we finish and wrap that one up. Make sure you do come by and do that. Make sure you comment, make suggestions, send me emails, whatever you'd like to do. I do have an email now that I'll give out. I'm not going to publish it on the site, but I will state it in the show. It's jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com, as basic as that is. I want to try to keep the spam on that down, so please don't publish that online anywhere. I don't plan on doing it. You can also go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and use it as a contact form, and when I reply to you, you'll have an email that you can use to email me back. I try to answer just about everyone. I know I don't get to everyone, but I try. Also, comment on the individual posts. If you want to add something, if you want to point out a resource, if you want to correct me, I do make mistakes, and I don't prevent people from correcting my mistakes. I look forward to your corrections of my mistakes. I'm one man with one man's opinion. That's what this show is really all about. And I'm trying to help people understand things at least as I understand them, so you have a different view that the mainstream media won't tell you. Okay, that's not tinfoil hat-based. Nothing I've told you today is big, massive conspiracy theory stuff. There's even a little bit of that stuff that I kind of believe in, just a little bit. But I look for real proof behind it. But the stuff I told you today, you can look it up, you can verify every bit of it. From the American Revolution all the way up to where we are today with a fiat currency that's based on nothing, you can look it up and you can see that it's true. That's what I'm all about here, is bringing you the truth, folks. So, this has been Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
Makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream, and you can holler. It really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.